Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of Authors and Agents with Rose Quinn. I have the incomparable Sophie Gonzalez on the podcast with me. She is the author of The Law of Inertia, Only Mostly Devastated, Perfect on Paper, which is her newest release that comes out just this month. And then later this year, she has another book coming out, co-authored with Kale Dietrich, which is called If This Gets Out. And she does have a couple other books in the pipeline too. She is amazing. And if you listen to the podcast regularly, you know that Perfect on Paper was my favorite book a couple weeks ago. And I can't even tell you about any other book because I'm still thinking about Perfect on Paper. It is just so well written. The characters are so real and the story sucks you in. The stakes, you know, feel so high. And I had the worst book hangover afterwards. Like, I just wanted to be able to read it again for the first time and feel all the feelings again. It's so, 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 so good. It comes out next Tuesday on March 9th, and you guys have to make sure that you go ahead and pre-order this book. It's so good. You're not going to regret it. But let's go ahead and get to know Sophie. Sophie, can you tell me about your upcoming book, Perfect on Paper?
Yeah, so Perfect on Paper is a young adult contemporary that follows a 16-year-old bisexual girl who runs a relationship advice business service through an abandoned locker at school. And then when she's caught by a guy in the year above her, he blackmails her to becoming his personal relationship coach to help him get his...
Well, goodness, that sounds amazing, and I can't wait to have it out in the world and see what people think about it.
Thank you. So it's a rom-com, like Only Mostly Devastated was, but I think it's probably a little bit overall lighter in tone than Only Mostly Devastated. Okay. Perfect on Paper versus Only Mostly Devastated, you'd hope they had slightly different tones, just
yes,
like the titles, I guess.
That is true. And Perfect on Paper will be your third published book, is that right?
Yes.
Cool.
Yes.
And then you have one coming out later in the year, Off the Record. Tell me a little bit about your journey to having, you know, not only your first book come out, but then the subsequent books. How did that happen for you?
Over a long period of time. So I started writing when I was, you know, quite little. I got into fan fiction when I was 11. Wrote Harry Potter fan fiction online for a few years. Then I wrote some original fiction online until maybe 18 or so. And then I think I was around 21, so that was back in 2013, when I decided, like, I really want to try to get published. What does this involve? Got on Twitter. And obviously, as you do, figured out that one of the first things I had to do was figure out querying. So my first book that I queried, I actually did not get an agent for. In hindsight, I can absolutely see why. It was my first completed novel, and I didn't necessarily know what I was doing. Yeah, I thought maybe I did.
Right.
So we're fine, just ignore that book forever. So I think I queried maybe 60 agents. Yep. So my second book, I entered it in a few writing contests in early 2015, maybe 6 months after I queried the last one. And it actually got represented quite quickly. Funnily enough, there was a girl who I didn't know at the time, Alexa Dunn, reached out to me out of the blue, and she was like, oh, I saw your book in one of these writing competitions. Well, I saw the pitch, it looks really cool, can I read it? I'm like, okay, who are you? But sure. Sent it through to her, and then she had an agent, and that agent ended up requesting it through a pitch contest on Twitter not long after, and she became my first agent. And then that book, unfortunately, we took it on sub October that year, and it didn't sell. It kept getting quite close. It went to acquisitions quite a few times. It was a different environment back then for even, you know, that recently for queer fiction. A lot of the rejections, They talk a lot about the very niche market that you're getting into, and you get a lot of rejections based around the fact that there's not a very big audience for queer books. That was back then. So unfortunately, that one didn't end up selling at all. So I wrote another book called The Law of Inertia, which did end up being my first published book. Even that one, we were on sub for quite a while, going to acquisitions a lot, and we kept hearing the same thing about the market, the niche market. And then that one ended up selling to a small publisher at the time called Amberjack Publishing. And then while this was all going on, I was keeping myself amused by writing what my agent and I at the time called Gay Grease.
Ooh,
Yes.
I love it.
Didn't have a title at the time, so I'm just plodding along, thinking that it's going to be ages before I have to get this one done. And then I remember she came to me, my agent came to me, and she was like, "Oh, look, because you have sold a book, in a book deal, you've proven that you're able to write an ending. What I want to do is take out what we called gay grease on submission on proposal," which means that I didn't have to write the whole thing. She just wanted to take out what I'd written, and I'm like, "Oh my gosh, I was not expecting this at all. Give me a sec. I'm just gonna get my CPs to look over, my critique partners to look over it, and
Yeah.
then I will get it back to you." I picked a title from a sentence in what was there, and this title that I picked was Only Mostly Devastated. We sent it out, and the last two subs, I've been on submission for roughly 9 months both times. So I was just like, "Well, let's settle in for the long haul. Not going to hear back for a while." And then 2 days later, I got a call from my agent when I was on my way into work, and she said, "Look, we've received a preempt from Wednesday Books." And for any listeners who don't know what a preempt is, that is essentially where the publisher offers a larger sum than they usually would. However, the catch is that you have to accept it in 24 hours without taking it out to any other publishers.
Oh.
So it's kind of like publishers' way of trying to head off an auction that they don't want to participate in. Not that it ever guarantees there would have been an auction, but that way that they know what they're paying for it. I guess kind of like an offer that you can't refuse, I guess is the way that you'd want to put it.
Right.
And we knew about Wednesday. We loved Wednesday. Loved the books they were putting out. They've developed a really great name for themselves, so we said yes. And after that, every book that I've written, I've sold straight to my editor at Wednesday, and it's just been wonderful.
Well, that is amazing. Yeah, I do feel like with this question that there is like, oh, it was a really long, winding journey is usually the start of the answer because every author has their long, winding journey that I feel like they have to go on to get where they are.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that there is the odd person who wakes up one day and says, "I'm going to write a book," and then writes a book that gets immediately repped and
Right.
published. I haven't met them.
I have not met them either. Well, so looking back on your querying experience, what would your maybe like top tip or top couple tips be for writers who are in the querying process right now?
The top tip is to keep writing new books. I do see a trap, I think. Maybe that's a bit of a dramatic word, but I do see some people get very set on one book. This is the book that they want to get represented, and this is the book. And sometimes they'll stick with that book for literally years.
Yeah.
And essentially, you're just robbing yourself of opportunities because it might not even be the book itself. If you think that this book is the best thing you could ever do, fantastic. If you restart a new book, it doesn't mean that this book will die. It could just mean that the market right now isn't ready for that book. It could mean that weirdly, a lot of people in the query trenches or even on submission tend to come up with the same idea at the same time.
Yes.
I've noticed this myself when I'm writing and suddenly a million other books just like my books. Oh, and it's like, but even when I've been a judge in, mentorship contests, for example, you see a lot of really specific ideas come through at the exact same time as each other, and it's like there's got to be some sort of cloud out there spitting ideas down to people. The same idea got to a few people in one hit. Bit of a tangent, but my point was going to be that, you know, it could just be that that happened. You don't want to kick yourself out of the game by refusing to put more hats in the ring, I suppose. Write something new, that book will always be there. And then if you get an agent, you can say, hey, I've got this backlist that I've written. You know, are you interested? A lot of the time they probably will be, at least in having a look, if they're interested in you. And, you know, by that point, maybe you'll look back on it and spot something that, you know, maybe made it not as good as you wanted it to be a year or two ago back when you wrote it, which is really common, and it means that you're growing as a writer. So that's just all good, really.
I think that is such a great tip. I think, you know, we all have those books of our heart that were, like you said, like, oh, I need this to be published, or, you know, this is going to be my debut. But I do think that there is, like, a cloud or like a little bird who like gives the same idea to a bunch of different writers at the same time. And,
yes,
you know, I think there, that happens often. And so you're trying to query something that, you know, thousands of other writers are trying to query at the same time. So definitely keep writing, keep working on new things. 'Cause I do think, like you said, you get better with every single one that you write. And so, yeah, you could look back, you know, one manuscript down the road or two, and then see something that could make that book that you love, like, even better.
Mm, absolutely. So you've noticed this little idea bird as well.
Yes, I have.
It's uncanny sometimes.
It is. You see a lot of very similar things, and I'm just like, how did all these people get on the same wavelength at the same time?
Absolutely. And it's just so specific sometimes. A couple of years ago, I was in Author Mentor Match, and I think it was maybe five or six books, all with the concept that the star signs were personified as people who lived in space and interacted with each other came through. And that is, like, very, very specific.
That is so very specific.
That exact idea. I was like, wow. But not good. It's just more that they just all had them at the same time. It was wild.
That is so funny. It's crazy how those things happen. Well, thank you for sharing that tip. I think that is something, you know, awesome for people to remember as they keep going. And I think, too, working on a new project can really help you just mentally survive the query trenches better. Like, if you're not just obsessing over query responses, you're working on something new is such a great way to help yourself get through that.
Yes, and in a way, it's kind of like finding a new crush when your old one's maybe unrequited. Like, after a little bit, you go like, oh, it's actually okay if that one doesn't get represented, because I've got this new shiny thing that I really like, so now I want this one.
Yes. Well, my next question for you, I'd love to know, so far on your publishing journey, what has been your favorite part and then your least favorite part?
I think out of all of them, can I go with two?
Yeah, yeah.
My two favorite moments were when I got the offer for Only Mostly Devastated, because it had always been a dream of mine to be with a Big Five publisher. And that was that moment of achieving that dream, which I thought beforehand maybe wasn't for me. Maybe I wasn't ever meant to be traditionally published with a Big Five publisher. So that was one of the best days of my life. And I think, honestly, the day that I got the cover for Only Mostly Devastated as well, it was just so beautiful. And I was just showing everyone, like, oh my goodness, look at this. It's just so gorgeous. Yeah, two really good days.
Those are the best. I mean, that is, you know, to have your dream fulfilled in that way is magical for sure.
Yes.
Well, how about your least favorite part of your publishing journey?
Easily being on sub. Worse than querying, actually, which, sorry if that breaks the hearts of writers who hope to get easy ones, you've got an agent, but at least with querying, for me anyway, I found it okay because I had more control. So if I got a rejection, I could send out another query and kind of be like, oh, maybe this one will be okay, and kind of keep that hope alive, I suppose, for submission. Oh, every rejection just feels like a door slamming in your face. So many fewer publishers, I suppose, than there are agents, so the rejections feel bigger, and you can't just go out and, replace each one with another person and pin your hopes on them. It's just like, okay, it's just getting smaller and smaller and smaller. I didn't enjoy submission, and I'm absolutely thrilled that one of the perks of having a wonderful editor at a great house is that I don't need to do submission anymore. I just stay with my family, and it's wonderful.
That is the best. I feel like you've definitely lucked out on that one. I do think that like submission people, writers maybe, and maybe it's like a good thing that they're naive about it in a way that they think like, oh, once I get my agent, it's all up here, uphill from here. Like everything will be so much better than querying. But yeah, I've heard lots of submission horror stories from authors that it does make me a little bit nervous too.
It's just one of those things, honestly. And every now and then there is like someone who goes, oh yeah, submission was really awful those whole 4 days. You know,
Right.
like, wow, yeah, that must have been really hard for you. There's no reason why that couldn't be your story.
Yeah,
So
that's true.
always be a
But
little bit hopeful while also buying a lot of ice cream and preparing for the worst.
yes, I'd rather be prepared for the worst too and think that it's going to be a lot worse because then if it is better, like you're just genuinely surprised instead of like disappointed, right?
That's I agree with that. I love that.
Well, tell me a little bit about your writing style. So when you're drafting, are you more of a pantser, more of a planner, or do you fall somewhere in between?
I am a massive plotter. I have my process. I've got the Save the Cat beat sheet, so I tend to follow. Are you familiar with that
I
by
am,
any chance?
yes, yeah.
So I always the first thing I do when I get an idea is write down the entire synopsis for myself. So usually about 3 pages of every single thing that happens, and that usually takes me a few hours, and then I go through and basically plot out the beats, so make sure that everything's falling in the right place, that the midpoint's happening at the right place, the climax is happening at the right place. And then you're gonna hear how type A I am in a second. I split up the synopsis by chapters, and then I decide how long each chapter's gonna be, and then that tells me how long the book's gonna be. And I stick to that as I'm going.
And does that change? Like, do you ever, as you're drafting, like maybe 25% of the way through or 75% of the way through, do things change?
My collab with Kale Dietrich, when we were sitting down to write it, the first thing we did was, okay, let's do a synopsis. In his head, a synopsis is like, oh, here's one possible option that the book could look like. But for me, it is like, well, this is exactly how the book's gonna look. So there was definitely like this, oh my gosh, how are we gonna do this if we're each taking one chapter? How do we make sure that the book doesn't veer off like a game of telephone, you know, and end up being, yeah, so that was very interesting.
Yeah, that would be interesting. I wish I could be like you in that sense. Like you seem very, dedicated to like you think about it, you write it down, and then you make it happen exactly that way. I always find that things go like haywire as I'm writing if I've thought about it, too far in advance. So I definitely do plot and I have a beat sheet that I use, but I do it more like each section of the book on its own. Because then I feel like, I don't know, I feel like if I have an outline, I have to stick to it, but then something will go wrong with my characters. They'll choose to do something different, and then it's all a kerfuffle, and I can't handle it.
I 1,000% understand. Funnily enough, I actually have the opposite problem when I try to pants, which is how I used to write fan fiction. I just go on these tangents. Like one book that used to be published online that is no longer up. It was something like 130,000 words, and
Whoa.
it was like
some sort of saga. We were nowhere near where we started. I had no idea where I was going with it. The story's been going for, like, in the character's worlds, a few years have passed now, and I'm like, what is going on? Need the outline, but I do think that, you know, people tend to just have their way, that the creativity happens and you can't really force it to be the other way. Maybe that's just my opinion, but...
I think you're so right on that, and I love asking this question just because we're all a little bit different. We all do it a little different, and it works, but I ask this question for maybe the authors who are listening who haven't quite nailed down their style yet. They can, you know, hear what other people do and try something new. I think it's always good to learn from each other.
Absolutely, absolutely. And then I think when you figure out what works for you, you just know, because it becomes so mm-hmm. much easier and more natural feeling.
I think so too, yeah. I have found, you know, if I try and do something different than my kind of crazy, you know, unorganized, a little bit mess, it just doesn't work. So, you know what? I just am going with it.
Perfect. Great plan.
Yes, great plan. Well, my next thing, I'd love to have you share something with me that your readers wouldn't necessarily know about you.
Okay. I think the thing, I have mentioned this online once or twice, but I still think that most people wouldn't know it about me. So they probably know that I really like singing, but they might not know that I got through a few rounds of the X Factor a few years ago when I was about 20.
What?
Yeah, X Factor Australia. did not get onto the TV side of things. It turns out there's actually quite a long process before the TV side of things. It was going pretty well. I was enjoying things, and then I got to the point where they genuinely have an interview with you with producers where they ask what your like hook is essentially. Mm. and I have hooks, you know. I actually have like a very, I would consider quite a dramatic life. I didn't. There was nothing that I felt comfortable sharing at
yeah.
the time, because, you know, like, a lot of the things they want to hear about, for some people anyway, are those sob stories, right? And I didn't really have one that wouldn't throw other people under the bus. I'm like, well, don't really have one. And, you know, people in front of me, I could see they had, like, these really inspiring stories they were rehearsing with people, and I'm like, oh, wow, you know, that is, I would cry listening to that, and, you know, I didn't really... I have plenty of things like that, but I can't use them. So they kind of just like gave me this really scathing look. But I tried really hard. I won a like national singing competition the years before that. That was, I think, yeah, it was run through the channel Fox 8, which is like one of our pay TV channels over here. I remember, he said, like, oh, was that the one that was hosted by Guy Sebastian? Because Guy Sebastian was a winner of Australian Idol a few years before. You can see they were trying to go, like, oh, maybe we can do, like, an angle with that. And I was like, no, it wasn't. And they were like, oh. And then there was just a really awkward silence, and I left. And I was like, I'm not getting through to the next round. And I did not get through to the next round.
Oh, that is crazy, you know, thinking about those TV shows. They do definitely... You know, you always see those people who are auditioning and then their long intro with their sob story or their inspirational story or whatnot. But, I mean, that's wonderful. I love singing. I love music. I'm not super good at it, but I adore people who are. So that's awesome. I love it.
Yeah. And I'm actually, because I had that experience and I've had another couple of reality show experiences, my next book after the collaboration, so my 2022 book, is actually set in a reality show. So I'm like very excited to use some of my like insider knowledge as to how like over the top and ridiculous reality shows are to make that hopefully a really fun movie.
Oh my gosh, that sounds really good. I think, you know, I try not to watch too much reality TV, but some of it is just so bad. It just sucks you in. So I will keep that.
You just got it sometimes.
Yeah, I'll keep an eye out for that one. That'll be awesome.
Me and my friend started watching The Bachelor ironically, and then one day it wasn't ironic anymore. I don't know when that crossover happened, but it happened and we were invested.
Yes, I used to watch it very regularly, but I luckily, at least for me in my, like, time, I just don't feel like I have enough time to be invested in that show. I got out of it, but there was quite a few years where me and my friend would watch it every single Monday and be very invested in the stories.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah. Well, my next question is on a typical day, and there's really no typical day anymore, right? I mean, like, right now you're in the process of moving, so there's probably no typical day, but what does your daily schedule look like for writing, and how do you kind of make sure you get that done?
Yeah. So I guess as of a few days ago, I've become a full-time writer for the time being. So I'm just going to have to base my answer on what it was when I was working full-time. So generally I would get up in the morning, go to my day job as a psychologist until get home at about 4:35. We have really early starts over that. And you know, kind of do everything that you need to, go for a run, have dinner, maybe like 6:37, I would start down, sit down and start working on writing. Maybe usually till about midnight, maybe 1:30 a.m. if I'm on deadline or I have a lot to get done. I would also use my lunch breaks to answer interviews, do writing, admin, and that kind of stuff. Because I tend to find that, you know, when you're in like admin mode, you really, it's difficult to be creative. And when you're, when you're getting, you know, you've got a book coming out, all of that kind of stuff, you do actually start having quite a lot of organizational stuff to be on top of. But then, you know, I know, like you said, there's no necessarily typical day. For example, I had for Perfect on Paper, roughly 3 months to write the whole book, which is, it's still a fairly quick deadline, but it's a reasonable deadline. However, I got very sick last December. I was in bed basically the whole month. And then I had about a month left to write this whole book. So my deadline for myself that month was 3,700 words a day I had to write.
Wow.
And I had to stick to it. There was just no other option. And then I wrote, it was about 80,000 words in a month.
Jeez. I mean, that is, you went from like a reasonable deadline to doing a very, very fast, quick deadline.
Yes, which is just, it feels like I'm just always on deadline these days, so I probably should become better at time management, but you always, you get it done. I think that definitely it's pretty difficult to hold down a full-time job while also writing. Once you start getting into the writing isn't the only part of the writing job anymore, that's when things start getting really intense. So but a lot of people do, you know, a lot of people hold down that day job and also write. So what can you do?
Yeah, what do? Those people might just be a little better at time management than other people. Because, I mean, it sounds exhausting to do both. Because, there is so much after, you know, you're getting published, you have all the publicity to do, all the admin stuff, and then, you know, you have to continue writing and work on your next thing. I mean, that's a lot of stuff to handle. And, you know, kind of on this same vein that we're talking about, you know, that itself can be, like, exhausting, right? But then the actual act of writing can be very emotionally draining at times. And then there's, you know, I think about, like, what you were talking about with Perfect on Paper. You had a month to write it. You had just gotten over being sick. I mean, there's a lot that can happen when you still, like, absolutely have to write. So from your experience dealing with just, like, life and being a human being, what would your, like, tips be for other writers to making sure that they're, you know, still taking care of themselves, but getting the work done?
I find that setting smaller deadlines, not the word I'm looking for, goals. I think the word I'm looking for is goals. Smaller goals is really helpful. If you can start early and say, look, I've got to get X done by this day. I'm going to write 500 words a day. 500 words a day is a lot more manageable for a lot of people. And, you know, there will be days where you just don't get that 500 words done. But even then, the next day, if you can catch that up and just do 1,000, that's not so bad either. And I'm certainly, don't get me wrong, I'm certainly not someone who encourages the whole you have to write every day thing. I don't write every day. I haven't written in about a week and a half because I'm in the middle of moving. Sometimes it just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I find that if you can try and if you're struggling, and sometimes it's like that. Sometimes you just don't really want to go back to this book. You're sick of looking at it. You really want to be doing anything else. Just say, okay, I am allowed to stop once I've finished this chapter, and just really giving yourself that break and that structure, I think, can be really helpful.
I think that is so helpful and a good way to look at it. I mean, I set a pretty small word count goal for myself every day now, too. Just, I don't write every day either. I mean, I have three small children to take care of, so some days it's like definitely not going to happen. But I mean, there's so much that is still part of the writing process, even when you're not writing. Taking care of yourself is part of it, you know, getting rest, taking care of your life and being a parent or doing your full-time job, like that all plays a part in your writing. So yeah, I think setting those manageable goals is super helpful just for your mindset. I mean, something small that you're like, yeah, I can do that. And if I don't do it today, like I can make it up the next day instead of, I mean, like I try to do NaNoWriMo every year, but sometimes that, even that word count goal is like a lot for me because when you miss a day, it like adds up very quickly.
Yeah.
that's always hard, but I think that is a good way to look at it for sure.
Yeah. And that's good practice, you know, for when suddenly you have to get a book done in a month one day. But yeah, it's also just like you said, when you're a writer, really your brain is your instrument. So like the same way that a musician wouldn't play their instrument to death every single day, some days are going to be about maintenance,
right?
And, you know, taking that break and looking after yourself. Or the same way that an athlete wouldn't play their sport every single day all day, you've got to look after yourself. That is part of the process.
Yes, that's so important to remember. I love that. Well, thank you for sharing that. I have just one final question for you. It is a hard question. People tell me that all the time, so I do apologize. I'd love to know right now what your favorite book is. This isn't your favorite book of all time. Just something you've read recently that, like, you can't stop shoving in people's faces.
I feel like some people aren't going to believe me because it is one of my closest friends' books. But I swear to God, it is actually a wonderful book. It's Trouble Girls by Julia Lynn Rubin. I'm teasing you guys a little bit because it doesn't come out until midway through next year. But it is a sapphic retelling of Thelma and Louise, with a Me Too kind of theme running through it. So it's about these two best friends. They have some stuff go down involving a man, and the man may end up a little bit dead. And then they have to go on the run, Thelma and Louise style, with this huge road trip. It's exciting. It's a thriller, but it's also very romantic. It's just one of those books where you really need to keep reading it because you're like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen? The stakes are so high. It's engaging. But also, Julia is one of the most beautiful writers I've ever read. Like, she just has this amazing way of, like, the prose itself is so gorgeous. Sometimes you're just staring like, wow. But it also doesn't distract you from the story, which I find is, for me, a hard balance to strike because I tend to roll my eyes quite a bit when things get a little bit too beautiful. I'm like, oh, terrible at that. I just want the story.
Right.
But she just nails that balance. I could not gush about it enough. Julia knows that I don't give out fake compliments.
you know. So if I say that it's good, I mean it's good.
She's amazing. I remember reading her debut, and I actually interviewed her on the podcast before. She's so incredible. I love her.
Yeah. Oh, I love Julia. She's the best.
Well, thank you for that recommendation. I mean, I love asking this question, even though it can be hard to answer, because there's so many good books that are out there or that come out, that are coming out, and we'll inevitably miss a bunch of them, right? So it's good to share, like, spread the word on our favorite ones.
Absolutely, even if there are so many.
Yes. Sophie, thank you so much for chatting with me today and telling me about your upcoming novel, Perfect on Paper, and letting me and my listeners get to know you a little bit.
Thank you so much for having me. I've really enjoyed our chat.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the podcast. Please make sure that you rate, review, and subscribe so you never miss an episode. So many great authors and agents will be on the podcast, have already been on the podcast this year, but I have so many great ones left for you for the year. You guys don't want to miss an episode. And make sure you follow me on Instagram and Twitter @RoseQuinney, Quinny. Thanks so much.